Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. Thanks for being part of my day. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and she is here to talk to us about the most recent Kiplinger letter. Joan Pride, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jim.
It's good
to have you back.
Well, it's like a dream come true, isn't it?
For you, you mean?
Yeah, that's what I was. Yeah. That's what I meant. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I just want to make sure.
Of course. No, that's what I meant. Hey, Joan, the president, President Obama, mm-hmm. has got to be looking in the mirror and saying, I know what I was thinking. Well, I know what I was feeling, but what was I thinking?
Right. Yeah, he's had a rough week. You got to admit that.
Yeah, he hasn't had a good week. I mean, let's tick off some of the things that happened. And look, folks, it's the only reason why it's a little bit humorous, Joan, is because this happens to every president. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, what has happened to him today, this week, in a lot of ways, is you just kind of got to expect it almost. But you keep thinking that maybe they'll figure out a way to stop it, but they don't. And so tell the audience what's the big news this week.
Well, to me, the big news was that his nominee for not only Secretary of Health and Human Services, but sort of this health czar position at the White House, Tom Daschle, the former Senate Majority Leader, had to withdraw because he failed to pay over $100,000 in taxes on a perk that he received from a company that let him use a car and driver for the business he was doing over the last few years.
But isn't it interesting that that was juxtaposed over on top of the Geithner scenario?
Well, right. And
tell the audience what happened there.
Well, Timothy Geithner, the long story, I'll keep it short, also failed to pay taxes, but he was confirmed as Treasury Secretary. There was a big flap over his nomination. It's kind of the Lehman versus AIG story.
Yeah.
They let Lehman fail, but they saved AIG.
Right.
They saved Geithner, but they let Daschle fail. You could argue if the Geithner thing hadn't occurred, maybe Daschle could have saved himself,
exactly.
But to have two in a row, and then this poor woman who was the White House performance officer, you know, her problem was she failed to pay $949 in taxes to the District of Columbia several years ago, but she had already fixed that. It's not like it was still outstanding. She had paid it back to the district government years ago, but she withdrew, and I think because the other problems.
Yeah.
This was sort of like a triple play there.
Mm-hmm. And well, the thing that you know, I've heard women talk about shoulder pad buildup. You know, where you put a blouse on with shoulder pads, and you put a sweater on with shoulder pads, then you put a coat on with shoulder pads, and so after a while, you got these monster shoulders. This was like shoulder pad buildup. You know, he couldn't have in the same week, Geithner, Daschle, and the lady. What's her name? I've forgotten her name.
It's
weird, like Blasingame. But I mean, anyway, he couldn't have all of that, and plus, he's already had his Commerce Secretary nominee to drop out because of some possible impropriety.
Right.
And there's another one. There was one more out there that I've forgotten about, Joan. But the point is, he couldn't afford that kind of shoulder pad buildup, could he?
Well, and as upset as people were that Tom Daschle had to drop out, I'm not saying I was or was not, but there was a hue and cry saying, gee, he was the best man for the job.
Right.
There's also a lot of talk that it was better that the losses get cut now rather than let these things drag on and on and on.
Well, exactly, and it was taking their eye off the ball, and it wasn't good for President Obama's, you know, his message, his effort. But he just, you know, even though Geithner was confirmed, it wasn't without some bloodletting. I mean, there was some pain and anguish over that. There are a lot of people who, reasonable people, Joe, not shrill, you know, not just shrill white ringers, right wingers who were against him. There were a lot of people who felt that Geithner should not have been confirmed.
Well, I tell you, Jim, I'm sure there are still people customers, investors, employees, and executives of Lehman Brothers who were saying, how come AIG got bailed out and we didn't?
Exactly. Now, that's a good point. That's a good point. So what you got here is the government picking winners and losers. But in this case, no, I think that I think he just had to stop. And I think you're right. I think your analogy is right about you know, the others getting sort of the backwash from the Geithner thing. Geithner skated through, but they just couldn't have any more of those.
Right.
Just couldn't have the buildup. Because after a while, it was going to start to look... Oh, I know what the other one was.
Bill Richardson.
Remember the lobby... Well, yeah, Richardson was the commerce guy. But remember the lobbyist that they made a waiver for?
Oh, Deputy Secretary of Defense, I believe.
I think so. And tell him what the deal was on that.
I don't remember.
Well, he... President Bush...
It was a lobbying thing.
President...
Yes.
Obama said there will be no. He had this rule.
Right.
There'll be no lobbying.
Right.
No lobbyists who will come in and will be able to, you know, et cetera, et cetera. He had some kind of a rule. Well, this person that he wanted didn't. He didn't fit that rule.
Right.
But they made a waiver of it, and they let
him
in.
Again, the AIG situation. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So all of this is compounding, and my point. One of the things I think, Joan, we should take away from this is this is complicated stuff. And how can any president expect to put this many people to work who have been doing what these people do, and as complicated as the laws are for making sure everybody dots the I's and crosses the T's, at some point in time, I wonder if we're ever going to get anybody appointed. You know, maybe we just got to go get all Sunday school teachers or something, you know?
Right.
But it's really tough. And we, you know, President Clinton had these problems. President Bush had some of those problems. It's a tough thing. And I'll tell you something else, Joan. We'll never know all the people who would have been good for a job and were considered, but because they didn't want themselves to have to be put under that kind of scrutiny, even if they didn't know that there was anything wrong, they just didn't want people looking under their, you know, under their tablecloths that much. They just bowed out.
Well, there are plenty of people who I'm sure have even said, don't even consider me. We'll never know who they all are.
Right. That's my point.
Right.
And some of these people could have been good people. So I don't know, John. I don't know how to reorder the test. Maybe it's the right way to do it. Maybe this is the way it is. But I know one thing. A lot of good people don't serve their country because they just don't want to be put through the gauntlet, basically. Hold on to that thought. We're going to come back and talk about good banks and bad banks after these messages. 20 after. Stay with us. That's Time Is Tight. I think that's Booker T and the MGs. Yeah. Welcome back. It's 23 after the hour. I love that song. Time Is Tight. Joan, you like that song? Is that a good one?
It's fine, I guess.
Joan Pryor, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kipling Editor and resident music critic. My website, by the way, folks, is smallbusinessadvocate.com. Don't forget to check it out. Use it to your advantage. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. And also check out my blog and my knowledge base, askjim.biz. You can do all that stuff from smallbusinessadvocate.com. Just go there and check it out and use it. Make it your homepage if you want to. I think you'll like it. Joan Pryor is our guest. That's the music critic, the resident music critic, and sometimes curmudgeon, depending on what the topic is. But Joan, one of the things you guys reported this week is that Washington is on the horns of a dilemma. They need banks to start loaning money again. Now, Joan, there's a plug. We're stuck somewhere. Our credit system is stuck, isn't it?
It is, and these banks want to be bailed out, but they're being given money, but they're not spending it. We need them to get lending going, and that's kind of, you know, you don't want to use what we call the N-word, and that being nationalization.
Right.
You don't want to nationalize the banks, but at the same, and you can't ram this down their throats in a free market society, but on the other hand, they're not doing what they need to do to get the economy going. So it's kind of a tough, we say it's a tough balancing act, and it really is.
All right, so imagine that you've got I'm trying to think of an analogy, Joan. You've got a container of something that's got poison in it, and it's gonna, and so you don't want to eat that or drink that or whatever, but you need something. You need some nourishment or some water or something, and this container's got a drop of poison in it. Well, pouring more clean water into that container is not going to get rid of the poison. It's just going to dilute it a little bit, but it's still going to hurt you. So you've got to create a whole new vessel completely separate from that poisoned vessel and put your clean water in that. Don't mix the clean water with the poisoned water.
Yeah.
All right? So what we got now is we got a poisoned banking system that has all these toxic assets that nobody really knows where they all are or who's... Or what to do about them, and people don't want to trade with each other because they don't know whether that bank the bank that you're doing business with, whether they've got so many toxic assets that they ultimately will fail.
Right.
So the bad bank scenario, as I understand it, Joan, that they're talking about is where the government creates a bad bank, I guess not unlike the RTC, the Resolution Trust Corporation, to come in and take over all those bad assets. Is that what it is?
Yeah, and I really don't like the name because
when
you think of a bad bank, it makes it sound like the bank is bad. There's something wrong with it.
I'm a bad boy.
Right. Yeah, that it's a category of banks that are not doing well. I think it needs to be, like a savior bank or something
Exactly. Yeah, the Hallelujah Bank or something like that. I like that. And so you're right, and it's got a bad name. And PR is everything these days, Joan.
Yeah, sure.
I would never have made it as far as I have without a name like Blasting Game. Think about that. So, PR is everything. You got to have something that people want to hear, that you can put a positive spin on. Bad bank is not it. To me, a bad bank is a bank that won't loan me money.
Right.
Regardless, what they're doing, Joan, is they poured clean water into this pot that had poison in it, and all they did was get diluted poison.
Exactly.
And that's what we got right now.
Yes. Didn't really help the poison much, but it, clouded up the water.
But here's the thing that's interesting. This is different from the Resolution Trust of the 80s and 90s, Joan, because as Bill Seidman, the guy who ran that, has said before, I love hearing him talk because he's got more wisdom in his little finger about these things than most of us, than any of the rest of us will ever
Former
have.
Former FDIC chairman.
Exactly. Yeah. Well said. Thank you. Bill Seidman... What he pointed out correctly that whenever they took over bad assets, that it was from a bank that had already failed, and so they didn't have to resolve anything. They didn't have to really pay for anything. The government already had possession of those things. Now they're talking about pulling bad assets. In other words, sort of like cutting the muscle out of an existing company, existing bank that's going to continue to work. And I think that's the reason why he doesn't like the bad bank idea.
Now, so
that's the problem, and so I guess the alternative is you can't. And so even though in those days, Joan, back in the 80s, it was just SNLs that really had the problem. That was the primary problem. Banks were SNLs, so those were allowed to fail. But now we've got so many of our big banks have these toxic assets in them, and nobody wants to let them fail.
Right.
And I guess that's why they're having so much trouble getting this going, Joan. And you guys continue to talk about this on the whole front page. What are some other things that they're doing, Joan? Can you? I mean, I don't know what else. The FDIC.
You mean in terms of setting limits on interest rates that weak banks can charge? The idea being that lenders that are kind of marginal could push borrowers too hard and you could end up with more defaults, which is not what we really need. And then interesting that they're talking about tightening capital reserves as well.
Yeah. More regulations, folks.
Yeah.
But the thing is, the problem, Joan, is this is regulating the entire banking industry. They need to figure out a way to focus on the toxic elements, not the entire system. That's the reason why nothing is happening, the economy isn't moving again, and when they fix that, it will start moving again. 29 after, stay with us.
He's the man Talkers Magazine says is one of the most important talk show hosts in America.
We tell you over and over again that you're wonderful, and you just don't get it. What's wrong with you?
He's Jim Blasingame, our small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. It's my pleasure, as always. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, one of the handy-dandy charts in your page one of the Kiplinger letter this week was a rundown of the stimulus forecast. This is the $818 billion, I guess it's a kind of a tour of the $818 billion stimulus bill, so-called stimulus bill, that the House sent to the Senate. And you guys identify this in here. And, Joan, it's been interesting. I'm really excited about the American public right now. I'm serious. I'm being very serious about this.
Okay.
Remember back in the September when Congress came up with the TARP plan, they were going to give $350 billion to bail all these banks out, which we now know didn't work, basically.
Right.
At least it didn't turn the economy around. It just maybe kept them from failing. But remember, the public came out of the woodwork on that. They didn't like it.
Yes. Right.
All right? Guess what? They're reacting the same way. What my point is, what I'm excited about, and this has nothing to do with whether I agree with them or not. Maybe I do, maybe I don't. What I'm excited about is the American people are looking, they're paying attention to what our Congress and our government is doing, and they're letting people know about it.
Right.
I like that. So the stimulus package that the House sent over to the Senate is not wearing well with the American public.
Right.
The approval rating has gone down a lot, mm-hmm. to the point where it could be in jeopardy.
Yes.
And I'm only saying that this is a civics, this is the civics lesson part of our show, Joan. Aren't you excited that American people are paying more attention to these things and not letting Congress just, and again, whether I agree with them, what they're saying or not, the point is I like the fact that this is happening. What do you think?
Right. Well, any time that the rank and file average citizen gets more involved in his or her democracy, it's got to be a good thing.
Well, it keeps everybody, Republicans, Democrats, everybody honest. More honest,
right.
At least maybe I should say.
Yeah.
It keeps everybody, making, it lets politicians know that if they start putting something together that's not a good idea, that they're going to have to pay for it.
Right.
And I'm really excited about that. Joan, but the stimulus package you guys point out here, you've got the final tab. You say it's $900 billion. I've heard people say that this thing could be $1.3, $1.4 trillion. This is one appropriations bill, Joan.
That's right.
Think about that.
I know. It's huge.
Trillion.
It's
scary.
It's huge, yeah.
And, of course, the big thing that people are upset about, Joan, is it seems that this bill, as currently proposed by the House, doesn't do enough in the early part of the period, right?
That's what people are saying, right?
Yeah, it just doesn't cover enough, and if you look at it, Joan, you guys point this out that things like the $65 billion to education, $54 billion to energy efficiency, $18 billion for health in IT, and $58 billion for other. It just doesn't seem to be enough in there to create jobs, to help promote jobs. And Joan, I've looked at this from a small business standpoint. I've gone through, I'm not going to say I've gone through the bill, tooth and nail, but I've called some people whose opinion I respect. I've looked at some of the line items myself. I can find nothing in here for small businesses that small business didn't already have.
Wow.
And see, that's an indictment of this bill, because small businesses, Joan, as you know, create over half the U.S. economy and employ over half of all employees and create most of the new jobs.
Yeah. Now, none of this that you're saying at this point is in the Kiplinger letter.
No. I said, well, my audience knows that because
okay.
I just got through saying.
Well, because you did say we were going to look at the stimulus forecast on page one, so I didn't want to get them confused.
She's right
okay.
about that. But I read some of the things that you have in here, Joan,
uh-huh.
like the energy efficiency and all that. So what did you think we should take away from your forecast listing here? Just was it just to show people how it breaks down?
I guess that was the intention, right?
Yeah. But it's a good list, folks. Individual tax cuts. There are $182 billion in individual tax cuts,
right,
according to the Kiplinger list. And, Joan, that's going to help. I guess that's in another time that would help consumers, but aren't consumers, when they get more money now, aren't they just saving that now? Aren't they afraid to spend?
Well, they're hoping that the way that they're giving out the money won't cause people to save it, and I will promise to tell you more when we come back from the break.
Right. She's going to have another little bit more on that when we come back, and then we're going to move over and talk about some other things, like this Buy American thing. They're reporting on that this week. You know, I talked about that in the last hour. 20 till, actually. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Yeah, we dance.
Back at 17 till, I'm Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate. Had a great visit with Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Their website, kiplinger.com. I encourage you to check it out. Joan, you got a bunch of publications there people can subscribe to, don't you?
Oh, we sure do.
We got this Kiplinger letter you and I work off of every week.
Yep.
That's the flagship, 85 years old. Still a family owned, basically a small business in many ways, at heart at least, aren't you, Joan?
Well, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons why so many small business owners like it, the Kiplinger letter, every week, every Friday afternoon. And then, of course, they got the biweekly letters, Joan. You got the tax letter.
That's
we like that
favorite.
Tax letter, don't we? Yeah.
That's my
and
favorite.
The California letter, the agriculture letter, the biofuels letter, and then they got that magazine thing.
Right. Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And a phone number.
Our phone number, our toll-free number, is 800-544-0155.
And if you ask them for a 30-day free trial, they'll give it to you. But they might even give it to you if you don't ask them for it. So check that out when you get a chance. And also, if you subscribe to any of these publications, you get access to the bowels of the website. You get to go back into the back of the website where all the hard work is done, and you get more of the details. Joan, speaking of California, and they don't call me the king of Segway for nothing, you guys reported that there's some indication that the federal government may allow states to impose tougher emissions criteria than the federal government does. What's this all about?
Well, we actually think that that's not going to happen. There's about a dozen or so states that want to increase curbs, and led the way by California, as you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
But Obama is concerned, the administration is concerned, that you'd have this patchwork, as you can imagine, of regulations that would be a nightmare for auto manufacturers that operate, you know, across state lines.
You mean like the nightmare they already have because they have to have a different automobile for California than they do for other states?
Right, right.
Yeah,
right.
They already have that.
Right.
Just with California,
yeah.
So it'll be interesting though to see, as Jonah, as the Obama administration moves towards, as it seeks, to its climate change agenda, it'll be interesting to see how it fights off these states and how all that reconciles. It, folks, that's something you want to watch, something you want to pay attention to. Jonah, do we know which states? Did we identify which states would like to control their own emissions? I don't think it says it here.
It just says California and other states, and
other
they tell
states,
us about a dozen. So I'll have to work on that one for you.
I get to get back to us on that, John.
Okay.
Here's some of the I know one thing that we need to talk about, Joan, on the tax line, and that's part of the bill that's going through the Senate right now may have increased exemptions for the alternative minimum tax, right?
Right, and we knew about that when the Kiplinger letter came out, but the bill is actually on the Senate floor now, and they've actually been adding even more tax stuff. For example, under current law, the first-time homebuyer credit is up to $7,500, but this would be increased to $15,000 under the Senate bill. And this is up-to-the-minute news for your listeners, you know.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But they're increasing the exemption for the alternative minimum tax. That's a big thing that needs to be done.
Right. This is the thing that they call it the patch, and it keeps expiring.
Yeah.
And it's a perfect word for it because it's really a Band-Aid. They need to either get rid of the AMT or figure out how to restructure it so it doesn't keep creeping up because they don't index it for inflation, it keeps creeping up and catching middle-income folks without this Band-Aid. So they keep adding the Band-Aid every year, and then it expires, and they add it again.
Joan, the Band-Aid is another way of saying full employment for our Congress, right?
Well, I'm saying because not dealing
if
with
they,
a
if
problem.
If they don't fix it and get rid of it, eventually they wouldn't have anything to do, right?
Well,
and so maybe
right.
They could just show up maybe like three months a year or something like that, do a little work and go home.
Right.
So if they keep, you know, if you think about it, Joan, look at all the things that they've done in the last few years that they don't actually resolve. You know, they give it a sunset, so it has to be renewed. The Band-Aid, the patch has to be renewed after
right.
a period of time. I think it's just a way of them keep making sure they can keep their job.
Oh, sure.
Am I sounding sarcastic, Joan? Is that
not
I,
at all?
I don't.
Oh,
I don't.
Sarcasm?
I really don't.
Oh.
I don't really mean to at all, Joan. the next one is this Buy America provision? Can you tell us about that?
The Buy America provision, yes.
But this is part of the economic stimulus package, ladies and gentlemen. Go ahead.
Right. Well, and this is also controversial that there's a provision that would make states and cities use federal funds. You know, if they get federal funds, they must meet the same requirements that federal agencies do now in terms of buying American. Now, if I'm not mistaken, I think the president has expressed concerns with this provision.
I hope so.
And that the pro-union folks have been upset with him for expressing those concerns.
Mm-hmm.
So what I find that makes, I find it interesting that the president would do that, and it shows that he's not sort of a knee-jerk
mm-hmm.
One-sided politician.
Maybe more pragmatic, which
that's
the
right.
side of him I'm looking for,
right.
Joan. I'm looking for, and I've seen some of that. I have to be, in fairness, I've seen some pragmatism on his part. I like some of the things I'm seeing from him. But this protectionist thing, Joan, this Buy America thing, which is protectionism, I mean, obviously, I want America to succeed. But, Joan, for example, you can't talk about the American automobile industry without talking about foreign companies who built plants and who built automobiles in the United States. So does that include those guys, or which
yeah.
are they included or excluded?
Yeah, that's a good
you know,
point.
Is it you know how deep does it go in the product line? I mean, people are getting when you buy a piece of equipment, you buy something that's been manufactured. If it's got 100 components, 30 of those may have come from somewhere else. You know, what's the rule of thumb there? How are they going to do that? It's not going to work. This protectionism thing, ladies and gentlemen, is a loser, and it's going to hurt the economy. And I think President Obama sees that. I think that's the reason why he doesn't like it. And if that's the case, good for him. Tintel, stay with us. Right back with Joan Pryde. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. Joan Pryde is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, one of the things you guys report on in the Kiplinger letter this week is the need for companies to be flexible. And I've been talking to my audience. In fact, we talked about this earlier today, about this in another hour, Joan, about the fact that however you made a living in 08 and 07 and 06, you're probably going to do something a little bit different in 09. However, whatever your customers needed from you that you may have started taking for granted that they need this and you deliver it and they pay you and you go home. You go home. In 09, you may have to start saying, okay, do you still want this delivered there? Do you still want these colors? You may have to, you may have to do some things that you don't, that you thought you could get away from. If you're going to have to be flexible, aren't you?
Right. That's right.
And you guys have some stories here. Tell us, give us a couple of examples here of some companies that have done this.
Well, let's see. Well, in terms of shifting markets, for example,
yeah.
mm-hmm. A company called Panamatics USA created virtual property tours for realtors' websites, which makes sense. But now, of course, the real estate market is in collapse.
Right.
So now they're doing virtual tours of commercial properties like hotels and restaurants and salons and spas to get to get people to go to these properties, and that's working.
Right.
So they've just kind of turned the cube a little bit, and they're still making money.
Well, and then here's a moving company called Santee Express that nobody was moving very much, so they shifted to warehousing. and storage.
And even capitalizing on the downturn by storing items, we say, from downsized businesses and foreclosed homes.
Right. Well, see, I used an example in the last hour, and this is a real example. I mean, I've seen this happen over the years many times. This isn't the first time this kind of a scenario has played out, John, where people had to do things differently. But I'm imagining that a wholesaler, a distributor, got a phone call from a customer, and the customer said, I'm not going to be buying from you in the future. I'm moving over to ABC. And the guy says, why? You like my stuff. We have a price. You know, you've always told me my prices were good, and well, yeah, but they, you know, what are they doing that I can't do? Well, they came to see me, and they told me that they bring my products not just on the dock, but they bring it all the way in the building and deliver it to my people.
Yeah.
Well, I could do that. Well, I know you could, but you didn't tell me you could.
Yeah.
And they did.
Yeah.
So maybe, and so now the guy who just got the phone call is, you know, 2 years ago, he said, you know what? I don't like going inside these buildings. I only want to deliver to the docks. And so, you know, business is good, so that's all I'm going to do. Well, somebody else beat him at his own game by going to that customer and saying, what do you need to have done? What can I do to help you? How can I help you use my products better? And that guy said, why don't you know what? It would help me. I could move my warehouse, my dock guy to the warehouse if you bring it inside.
Ah.
And that guy said, sure. And the customer said, how much is that going to cost me? And the guy said, nothing.
Wow.
You know, because all it took was his guy an extra 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's little to pay for keeping a customer.
Oh, sure.
Or gaining a customer.
And especially in this economy.
That's exactly right. These are the kinds of attitude adjustments, Joan, we're all going to have to make. We're all going to have to take. To be able to survive and thrive,
right.
in 2009. Yep. Joan, let's move over and talk about on page on page 4. Let's talk about the housing situation.
Oh, do we have to? I'd really rather not.
Okay. Well, what else you got on your mind?
Well, nothing. But it's just such a downer way to end the show.
I know. Well, we were doing so good there with the new thinking thing, right?
Yeah. We see there's still a long way to go before the housing market turns around. So we haven't hit bottom yet.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what's going to have to happen, Joan. Of course, mortgages are down. Mortgage rates are way down.
Right, and people are refinancing homes. People
they are, and Joan, I think people are starting to buy some of these houses that have been foreclosed on. I think that's some of that's starting to happen too.
That's right.
We don't like the numbers, Joan, but I think we kind of like the trend a little bit, don't we?
Well, I hope so.
Can't we end on a positive trend? Can't you and I just agree on that? Let's just do that.
Oh, okay. All right. I guess that's all right.
Okay, Pollyanna. Let's just do that. And now join me in a rising rendition of Kumbaya, right?
Right.
Hey, Joan, thanks for being here. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
We'll see you next week.
Okay.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, with the Kiplinger Letters. I got to wrap it up for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. And as you know, this program is for you. And one more thing. Today, remember to be guilty of committing a random act of kindness. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.